Good morning, everyone. It is Monday, August 21st, 2017, and we are about 36 hours removed from the Green Bay Packers winning their second exhibition game against Washington, 21-17 final score on the road at FedEx Field. And here to talk about it with me is Tom Silverstein. My name is Michael Cohen, and this is the Packers Podcast. Tom, it's good to have you back.
It's great to be back. I feel like I played my hardest on Saturday night, and now I'm in the rehab portion, rest and recover. So
where do you want to start with this game? What sounds good to you? It was an interesting game because, you know, we actually saw Aaron Rodgers, but then late in the game it really dragged because it seemed like McCarthy was super injury conscious beyond the second quarter. Mm. I mean, there was nobody that played starters at all in the second half, essentially.
Yeah.
So what stood out to you? Where should we begin with this one?
Well, I guess what stood out to me were two things. One was I learned absolutely nothing about the running backs. And number two, either Washington's offense really stinks or the Packers have pretty decent defense. I'm not sure which of those. I'm not willing to go out on a limb on that right now. I sort of get the feeling that Washington's offense stinks. Like they don't really have any receivers that can test the Packers. Their running game is okay, and they wanted to run the game, and the Packers shut it down. And I thought they tackled fine and all of that kind of stuff. But I really did want to see something out of the running backs, and so we're looking at the play-by-play here. It's hard to believe they had 29 rushes, but what?
20 were called, and 9 were scrambles, McCarthy said.
Okay.
And the two leading rushers were Taysom Hill, and it ended up being Khalif Phillips, but for up until the last minute of the game, it was Taysom Hill and Aaron Rodgers as the two leading rushers.
Yeah, I mean, Jamal Williams, 1.7. Devontae Mays, 2.6. This is yards per carry. Aaron Jones, 4.7 with a whopping 3 carries. And Khalif Phillips, 3.4 with 5 carries. I learned nothing. Absolutely zero. And I think even Rodgers said after the game they got to find out about their running game.
Yeah, it was interesting too because the first drive, of course, is this really long drive with Rodgers that goes down the field and they score a touchdown. And it was 15 plays, 75 yards. And I'm looking now and it had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 runs, 10 passing plays.
Yeah, that, folks, is your Green Bay Packers, and that's going to be your Green Bay Packers this year. And I think assuming or wishing or even thinking that they're going to run the ball, the only time they're going to run the ball is when they get ahead and they need to run out the clock consistently, and maybe when it gets a little bit colder. But I'm not sure I would run that ball if I had Aaron Rodgers and Nelson, Cobb, Adams, Bennett, Kendricks, and that offensive line. I'm not sure that I would run it all that much either.
And it's interesting because they had – so it was essentially 2-1 passing to running on the drive with Rodgers. And McCarthy said on Sunday afternoon at his press conference that he thought that was good run-pass balance. And then from there it went downhill.
Yeah.
And so, I don't really know. To me it was surprising because I just sort of thought that winning the game was going to be more or less irrelevant in this one, and they were just going to run the ball.
Yeah.
And it didn't happen. And now they're going to go against a Denver defense next week that could eat these guys alive, some of these young backs, especially when the backup line gets in there.
Yeah, and if there's a game in which they should highlight the run, it's this one, with assuming Rodgers is going to play a quarter, maybe a little more than a quarter. Start off with the run, get Denver playing the run, you know, make sure that they're off balance and not necessarily keying on Rodgers and putting some hits on him. You got to find out at some point whether it's not so much whether they can run the ball, but who can run the ball. Like, find out which one of these guys is going to be their running back, because someone's going to have to split time with Montgomery.
And it was, to me, the thing that was most surprising was that in seven carries behind the starters, Jamal Williams had 12 yards. And this was a starting offensive line that we've talked about has looked really, really good in practice, to the point where we've seen McCarthy, we've seen Turgovac, we've seen a lot of these coaches screaming at them to play better.
Yeah, but one thing to always remember, and I've learned this through experience, is that these offensive lines, if they don't run the ball in games, they don't get better, and they don't get a rhythm. And so the Packers, it's sort of a catch-22. They, if that's the right metaphor or analogy, they continue. The more you run the ball, the better you get. And the Packers don't run the ball that much, but they're so good at passing it, so why should they? So it's kind of, you know, there's a balance there. And you have to lower your expectations. They're never going to have, you know, a Gurley run for, you know, 1,600 yards or whatever it is. They're just not going to be that kind of team.
So what do you think has changed since, really just in the last 4 years, since Lacy was a rookie and sophomore and had 1,100, I think, and then 1,300? What's changed so much since then?
Just that they don't have Lacy. I mean, Lacy's a darn good back. The guy averaged close to 5 yards a carry, and it really was a good changeup to have him. And he could pound out yards, and the linemen love blocking for him. And I thought he was really good at setting them up. One of the things I liked about Lacy was that he was so patient and waited and waited, and then when the hole was there, he went to it. And I don't believe they have anybody like that right now. To me, that's the biggest difference of where they are right now.
Friday night in the hotel at Washington, I caught about the first quarter and a half of Seahawks-Vikings.
I didn't see that. How did he look?
Well, first of all, the starting left tackle for the Seahawks tore his ACL,
yeah.
George Fant, right?
Yeah, that's a huge blow.
But, I mean, Lacy looked like Lacy. The problem is he's doing it behind a worse offensive line. I mean, you know, the Packers, he was spoiled in some regards running behind the Packers because not only did they have good players, but they've been essentially fairly healthy, you know, last year and the year before even. And now he's going behind this line in Seattle that was terrible last year, and they're trying to rebuild it. And, you know, there were times where he would go full speed and then he'd just run into somebody's back because there's nowhere to go.
Really?
Now, again, it doesn't mean anything, no, but,
right.
I mean, they've got a lot to sort out, I think, between now and week one, because not only do they need a new left tackle, but, you know, they're trying to work in a new running back. That's going to be really interesting to see. That's one thing I'm actually really looking forward to about the first month of the season, is just seeing what Lacy looks like when he comes back here.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Especially if the running game here is nowhere to be found.
Yeah.
Surprise you at all that no carries for Ripkowski or Carriage?
No. No, they got to find out about these other guys. The only reason Ripkowski's back there is to pass protect or block. And I wouldn't even waste carries on those guys right now. Ripkowski will get his share. He'll get his short yardage. He knows how to do all that kind of stuff. They got to find out about Jamal Williams more than anything. You know, Aaron Jones has a chance. Devontae Mays, I think, is really... I thought he was going to be better. He seems kind of developmental. But Williams is just, you can tell the talent level and just the pass blocking and everything. So they really need to get him going.
So that's something we'll have to keep an eye on this week in practice as we head closer and closer to the Denver game. Let's stay on offense for a moment and talk a little bit about some of the receivers that had a chance to do a little something. And, you know, we talked about these guys in depth in previous weeks, but I want to focus on their secondary roles. And I want to talk about Trevor Davis in terms of the punt return battle. You know, this is a guy that is sort of on the fringe of the roster in a couple different spots, or at least close to the roster fringe. You know, that muff punt early in the game, how detrimental can that be for this guy?
It can be. I think they'll make some excuses for him. One of them is somewhat legitimate in that Kevin King just whiffed on his block, and that guy was bearing right down on him. Nobody should be bearing down on a guy like that, especially if he should be directed a certain direction so that Davis isn't really thinking about that guy. But Davis also has to be aware. He has to be aware where everyone is. And, you know, fair catch it if you're even, you know, halfway worried about it. And my guess is that he decided hell or high water, he's not going to fair catch. And you got to be careful with that because you don't want to lose your job. I think they'll continue to give him a chance. As long as he doesn't mess up again, he'll be their punt returner. But that's his one strike, I think.
No, I think so too. And I think that one of the things that people, you know, even some of the writers that watch the team every day, that you take for granted that even though Micah Hyde's numbers over the last 2 years were significantly lower than they were the 2 years before that, he'd never dropped the football.
Never. Yeah.
And, I mean, we sort of chuckle sometimes when Ron Zook, the special teams coordinator, says, well, you got to catch the ball. That's the most important thing. And it's kind of like, well, duh, obviously. But
yeah,
it's harder than it looks. And Hyde was as reliable as they come.
Yeah, I mean, he had a couple of muffs, I recall. He had that one where he misjudged. And then he had a couple of misjudges. He had one where he let a ball bounce by him. But regardless, your point is made. One of the things I'll always remember about covering the 96 Packers was Desmond Howard. And, you know, he was just a phenomenal punt returner. And the thing that absolutely separated him, I remember Holmgren pointing this out to me, and then I started watching it, was that he caught the ball in his hands so softly. His hands were always out in front of him. And he never caught it in his chest. He always caught it right smack in his hands. And before you knew it, he was off and running. And he never fumbled, never muffed. It was just such a smooth apparatus that he was so good at. And that's what you don't really see with any of the guys that they have. Cobb's probably the closest to that.
And do you still think that even with the struggles for Davis, that if McCarthy and Zook have their druthers, that Davis will, quote-unquote, win the job in order to keep Cobb away from having to do that?
Yeah, I just think that Davis's speed is really tempting. And I think Davis will be more careful from now on. I think he'll fair catch and prove that he's reliable. That was just a case of he should have fair caught it, and he didn't.
When he wasn't out there later in the second half, they went to Max McCaffrey.
Mm-hmm.
And McCaffrey really only had two chances. I think he was punted to three times, but one he let go because it was deep toward the end zone.
Right.
One he made a running fair catch in traffic that I thought was actually pretty impressive. There was like two or three guys around him. And then he had a 17-yard return. And, you know, again, this is a guy that we've talked about as probably being more likely to trend toward the practice squad, but the fact that he had the 17-yard return, the fact that he caught the ball in traffic, does that win any points at all that he can have some special teams value?
Heck yeah, that's huge. He made a really nice catch along the sideline, too, to get both feet in. He just keeps impressing you to the point where, you know, if it keeps happening, if he could get... I would like to see him get some reps with Rodgers in this game coming up, or at least this week in practice, because Rodgers is probably going to be taking a lot of first-team reps. I would really like to see whether those two can click a little bit. So maybe as part of trying to find out whether he should be on the roster, they let him do that. But, yeah, he definitely – if Trevor Davis drops another punt, all of a sudden, you know, McCaffrey's a little bit getting – he's got his foot in the door.
And that was sort of the progression we saw with Geronimo Allison last year, where he started making plays with the Callahans and the Hundleys, and who was the fourth quarterback last year, Marquise Williams.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe about halfway or two-thirds of the way through camp, he started to get some reps with Rodgers, and the same thing continued. So when that happens – you know, is that the clearest sign to the coaches that if you can do it with the ones, that is for real at that point?
No question that Rodgers trusts you and is willing to throw you. Well, if he's willing to throw you the ball, it's because you're open. So I think that they now know that he can catch everything. The thing they got to find out is, can he get open against real high caliber cornerbacks? And so far we've seen him do pretty well.
So let's flip over to those cornerbacks, and let's start by talking about Josh Hawkins, a guy that when we talked to the assistant coaches during the week, cornerbacks coach Joe Witt Jr. said he wanted to test him against starting receivers. And so Hawkins got the start with, who was the opposite? Kevin King, and then in the slot was Rollins.
Yeah.
So that was the nickel in terms of the three corners. And he definitely responded in a positive way.
He did. And, you know, he was my thumbs down during the Insider this week when I did it. And he had a bad practice, and he had a up and down game. And then he comes back and he's covering a bigger guy, Vernon Davis. Now, maybe Vernon Davis is washed up now. I know he's Bob McGinn's favorite player of all time.
All
if you're
time.
Listening, Bob, I'm just teasing you. He just played really well. He tipped that ball in the end zone with his left hand, reached in, perfect. Hit Davis in I don't know if it was a zone coverage, but he came up and popped him pretty good and knocked the ball out. Played another fade, had a tackle for loss. You know, he just played a really good, solid game, and that puts him back in the game.
Yeah, and honestly, I was a little bit surprised to see him play as well as he did. Not because I thought that the guy doesn't have the athleticism to do it, but
no. He
seems to just be a tick or two behind or a tick or two off in certain spots, and then he'll flash the things that obviously the Packers, are attracted with when it comes to his game. And so, you know, with Randall still coming back from the concussion, with House being brought along slowly from the hamstring, is this a guy that, you know, is definitely pushing toward earning another spot on the roster again?
Yeah, they benefited a lot from having Randall and House out. It sounds crazy to say that, but it really gave them a chance to look at King and gave them a chance to look at Hawkins. And I'll tell you, even, you know, Ladarius Gunter did not get a lot of playing time, but I'll tell you what, every time since he's moved into the slot, I've not seen him really get burned. Did he give up anything in that game that I missed? I can't remember.
I remember him giving up a catch, but it wasn't anything more than, you know, maybe 10 yards or so.
Yeah, I've been kind of surprised, and they got, I don't know if they can keep both those guys. I haven't really done the numbers yet to see how many guys they can keep at each position, but the more cornerbacks you got, the better, you know?
So McCarthy was asked about Hawkins Sunday afternoon, and I thought his answer was really interesting. So first of all, he said that Hawkins was the highest graded corner out of the game, which that didn't really surprise me because I thought he did play, you know, really, really well.
Yeah.
But this was the part that surprised me. So we've talked about how last year, after that game against Detroit where he made that, you know, really careless mistake, he never saw the light of day again. And a lot of it was because he didn't seem to really establish himself on special teams to the point where he warranted being active. But the quote from McCarthy was really interesting. He said, "So if you look at last year, he actually played really well on special teams. Maybe not as far as his game opportunities, but throughout the second half of the season, our special teams coaches were very high on him and were fighting to get him up, meaning on the active roster, on a weekly basis."
Mm-hmm.
Which I would not have guessed that based on the way he started at special teams earlier in the season.
Yeah, well, you can't teach speed, and he's got 4.39 speed. He does have the long arms, 32 1/4. And he's a good hold-up guy, and he's a potential gunner, too. So, yeah, you can see that would be really beneficial to have a guy like that. More speed, the better on special teams. Yeah, he's put himself in a pretty good position.
And last thing I'll say about Hawkins, I thought sort of what impressed me the most about his performance, you know, the PBUs were obviously nice, but I thought from a guy that really struggled to tackle against Philadelphia to a guy that looked as solid as he did was a bigger change than I would have expected. And that was kind of a team-wide thing. They actually tackled pretty good against Washington.
They
is that something
tackled.
You noticed as well?
Yeah, they gang tackled. They finished. Kevin King, again, seems like he's one guy who form tackles all the time. And they're going to need that from their corners. Their corners are going to have to play support in the run game. And I thought they did tackle all the way around pretty well.
So what do you make of this defense? They give up 9 points to the Eagles. And then in this last game, they give up 17, the last seven of which did not come until what is this? Midway through the or 5 minutes left in the third quarter. So for essentially 40 minutes, they hold them to 10 points.
Yeah.
What do you make of this group so far?
Well, again, it comes down to who are they playing and how much are those teams game planning and how much are the Packers game planning against them. I'm not going to get too high about their performance, but I did see some good things. I thought their defensive line played better this week than it did the first week. I think you saw Kenny Clark play a little bit better. Christian Ringo, I thought, had a heck of a game. Dean Lauer getting hurt didn't help. They just played solid. I thought they played good, solid defense. And the thing that's going to probably really determine how they do is how they function as a nickel defense playing the run and making sure they get some pressure. So far, so good, I would say. They look good. I just don't know what to make of it yet.
And nickel defense against the run is so crucial because, A, that's the formation they play the majority of the time, and, B, it means that you don't have your biggest size package on the field. So can you stop the run with smaller guys, right?
Right. And they don't have a big – so they can't play a nickel where one of their – inside pass rushers is a 340-pound nose on first down. That's when you would do it on nickel. You'd have a big nickel. They have to go with Kenny Clark and Mike Daniels. And then they have, if they're in that nitro, then they're an inside linebacker and a safety. So that'll be a big thing to watch. But I know Washington went in this game wanting to run the ball, and they couldn't.
What do you make, if anything, of the fact that the defense played pretty darn well, but they only had one sack, and it didn't happen until the last 5 minutes of the game?
Yeah, I thought that was a little bit of a concern. You saw a little bit of pressure. I think there was some pressure. Cousins didn't. Did they have any quarterback hits? I don't know if they knocked anybody down.
Four total. Yeah, I think Jayrone. Did Jayrone finish with one?
Ringo had two, I think.
Okay. Yeah, two for Ringo, one for Reggie Gilbert, which was the sack.
Was the sack.
One for Martinez. Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's the wrong category. One for Gilbert, two for Ringo, one for Clay Matthews, and that's all you got.
Okay. So they had enough pressure. I thought there were times that Cousins had to get rid of the ball pretty quickly. Once they took Matthews and Perry out, you know, and then Elliott, you know, they weren't – it's hard to tell whether they were getting proper pass rush. I thought they blitzed less. They tried to – generate pass rush without a blitz this week, which was a good idea. They got to find that out too.
And on the flip side of that, you know, we aren't necessarily talking about the offense, but you mentioned blitzing. I talked to a couple of the offensive linemen that said they were caught off guard by how often Washington blitzed. Mm. So that's something to keep an eye on for those of you that may go back and watch the game or just focus on next week's and see what the offensive line looks like. I talked to Spriggs in particular, who said they knew they were going to blitz, but they threw some weird stuff at them that they were not expecting, and he thought it was a pretty decent test for him.
That's good. Yeah, that is good.
Anything else from this game that jumped out to you?
Probably, let me think if there was anything else that really stuck out. That Will Blackman is still playing. Man, that's incredible.
Pete Doherty said the same thing.
Man, he had such a star-crossed career with the Packers. He was such a good athlete coming out of Boston College, and he was going to be one of these, you know, multiple play both sides of the ball kind of guys, and he just couldn't stay healthy. But the guy has just hung around and hung around. I give him a lot of credit.
Yeah. I remember after one play, I said, "Who made that tackle? Was that 41, which was Blackman?" And Pete goes, "Yeah, I can't believe he's still in the league."
Exactly. I saw McCarthy talking to him after the game for quite a while, and he's a great guy too. Very, very intelligent guy, which is probably part of the reason he's been able to stay in the league so long.
I don't think there was anything else really that jumped out at me that we haven't already talked about. We spent so much time talking about the quarterbacks on one of the podcasts last week, so
yeah.
I don't think we need to jump in there too much. But yeah. Taysom Hill played well again.
Yeah, he did. He did. He can run. He can do something with the ball, and the guy's got a good arm. He's got a lot to learn. Callahan had a terrible game that really hurts him.
He played six snaps.
Is that all it was?
Six.
And got sacked twice?
Yeah. I looked at the snap counts. It was 24 for Hill. I think it was 16 for Rodgers. And then 20-something for Hundley and six for Callahan. I just entered them in before the podcast.
Yeah, yeah. You could tell on one of those plays McCarthy was not happy with him. One of those it was either a sack or he threw the ball away. I can't remember. I think he got sacked and he came to the sideline and McCarthy gave him one of those, you know, that look you always get. Like, we get that look in the press room or in the interview room when we ask him a question he doesn't like. So, yeah, Hill took a major, major jump ahead of Callahan, and we'll see how that plays out this week.
So we'll have to keep an eye on that throughout the next couple of days of practice.
Yep.
I think tomorrow will be a solo podcast. You'll be down in Milwaukee.
Yeah, I'll be blind from looking at the eclipse straight. You know, I don't have any devices. So I don't – kids, don't do this. Don't be like me, but, you know, I'm going to probably be doing all kinds of weird ritualistic things tomorrow, so I won't be with you.
It's funny you mention that. My Uber driver on the way to the airport in Washington, D.C. to fly back here, in addition to driving Uber, obviously, he worked at the Smithsonian. And he said that he brought home like 15 pairs of those glasses and was just giving them out to people as he drove Uber.
Man.
But he was out by the time it got to me, so I couldn't come away with any
there
of the glasses.
There you go. I'm going
to
be blind tomorrow. It's all your fault.
So we'll be back probably, what, practice is when? Tuesday?
Tuesday.
So we'll be back on the podcast together on Wednesday morning. I'll have a solo version for you Tuesday morning, and Tom won't be able to see, but he'll talk you through it.
Yep, yep. I'll be able to just point me towards the mic.
All right. So we will talk to you guys soon. Thank you very much for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.